Well, good evening. I appreciate so much the crowd here tonight. Number of people here. If you'd like to open your Bibles to Mark, the sixth chapter, that's where we will begin tonight. I am so thrilled to be here. My wife, Tabitha, and our kids, we have so many very close friends that worship here, and it's so good to see you again. I've already actually been told that I was someone's oldest friend when I walked in, even though the person that told me that, neither one of us feel that old. But Emily and I have been friends since long before I can even remember. And it's good to see her again, and good to see all of you again. And I'm so thrilled with the topic that has been discussed this whole month about serving God. Service is at the core of everything that we do. It really is. And if you don't believe that, you need to just kind of analyze your life and what others do. And you'll soon learn that service is what life is really all about. And tonight's lesson about serving God within your family is something that's near and dear to me. When Kevin asked me to speak about this, I kind of had to decide which direction I wanted to take this. Because the Bible says a lot about our family. That was the initial unit that God set up for all of us, is family. And so he says a lot of things, so I decided kind of where we wanted to take this. And I finally decided that what we wanted to do was we wanted to look at Jesus. And for those of you who are good Bible students, which I know a lot of you are, the Bible actually doesn't say too much about Jesus and his physical family. And so, of course, you're probably thinking, well, that's good because we'll be out of here by 7 o'clock and then I can go on home. And those of you who know me well know that I don't talk very long anyway. But I do want to take a look at the way Jesus interacted with his family. And so let's do that in two different ways. Let's first divide it up. Parents, let's talk to you first. Parents, what do you want to do? What do you need to do to serve God in your family? Well, let's look at Mark, the sixth chapter, beginning in verse 1. This is Jesus. He's come back to Nazareth, and he says, "And he went away from there and came to his hometown, and his disciples followed him. And on the Sabbath he began to teach in the synagogue, and many who heard him were astonished, saying, 'Where did this man get these things? What is the wisdom given to him? How are such mighty works done by his hands? Is not this the carpenter, the son of Mary, and the brother of James, and Joseph, and Judas, and Simon? And are not his sisters here with us?' And they took offense at him." Jesus was part of a family, part of a fairly large family, as far as we're concerned. A lot of families in the United States at least have 2 to 3 kids. Obviously, there were many more kids in Jesus' family. And so, parents, what do you need to do to serve God in your family? You need to teach your kids. Teach your kids. It's that simple. It's that simple. And looking at Joseph and Mary, what did they teach Jesus? Well, unfortunately, we're not told a lot, but for those of us who have been parents, we can probably make some guesses at what they taught him. They probably taught him, first of all, they taught him about life. We just read. Jesus was part of a family. So what did they teach Jesus? Well, they taught him probably how to be a good son. And they taught him how to be a good brother. He had brothers and sisters. He was a big brother. He was an example to all those. They probably taught him that. They taught him how to interact with people. You ever notice when Jesus is walking around during his ministry, how many times does the Bible mention he had compassion on people and he would talk to people? He even knew how to stand up to people when that needed to occur. Jesus knew how to interact with people. Joseph and Mary probably taught him that. They taught him things about life. Joseph also taught him how to be a carpenter. You know, Joseph was a carpenter. Here we read in Mark 6 that Jesus was a carpenter. Now, we normally think of carpenter as someone who works with wood. In the first century, the word had a little different meaning. It really meant a builder. It included wood, but it also included stone and any other types of things that you would build with. Probably the closest thing we can come up with nowadays is masonry work. For those of you who've worked with concrete blocks all day, What type of work is that? It's hard work. It takes pain, dedication, and quite frankly, doing things that you don't want to do. Whenever I'm asked to do masonry work, I'd much rather be sitting on my couch. I don't want to do that. It's hard work. But think about the lessons he learned. He learned what hard work is. He learned what pain is. He learned how to be dedicated to something. And he learned how to do things that he didn't want to do. Do you think those lessons paid off for Jesus later on in his life? Going through pain. Doing things you don't want to do. Dedication to what you know you should do. Of course. Do you think when Joseph was teaching Jesus to be a carpenter, that Joseph knew he was preparing Jesus to take on the greatest task that would ever be taken on in mankind? Probably not. But he taught him. He taught him about life. Parents, do you want to serve God in your family? Teach your kids about life. Let them know about life. But that's not the only thing you should teach them. Look in Luke the second chapter. In Luke 2, we have a story here of Jesus and his family going to Jerusalem. And beginning in verse 41, it says, "Now his parents went to Jerusalem every year at the feast of the Passover. When he was 12 years old, they went up according to custom. And when the feast ended, as they were returning, the boy Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem. His parents did not know it, but supposing him to be of the group, they went a day's journey. But then they began to search for him among their relatives and acquaintances. And when they did not find him, they returned to Jerusalem searching for him. And after 3 days, they found him in the temple, sitting among the teachers, listening to them, and asking them questions." Joseph and Mary taught Jesus about God. And that's what we should teach our kids about. Teach them about God. Did you notice how this passage started off? It says they went up every year to Jerusalem. Every year. Now the distance from Nazareth down to Jerusalem is about 60 to 70 miles. If they're walking, this would have taken them about a week. Then they would have been in Jerusalem for about a week and then would have returned home. This would have been a 3 to 4 week trip at minimum for them. And being the good Bible students that you are, I know that you realize that this wasn't the only time every year they went to Jerusalem. They went at least 3 times a year. This was a dedication. But if you've got a week to talk to your kids while you're walking to Jerusalem, what do you talk about? Well, you're probably talking to them about where they're going. We're going to Jerusalem. It's where the temple is. Why are we going? We're going to celebrate the Passover. What do you know about the Passover? And he tells them the story of Moses and how God led their people out of Egypt. And as they walked, they would have passed different places. Kids, look. Do you remember me telling you the story about Joseph and how his brothers sold him into Egypt? That took place right over there in Dothan. And kids, do you remember when I told you that the tabernacle used to move around? Well, for a while, it sat right over there at Shiloh. That's where our people would come to worship God. And kids, do you remember when I told you the story about Joshua fighting the people, fighting the Canaanites? And they did that here at Gibeon. And remember, they were running out of daylight. And remember I told you what God did? God stopped the sun. Kids, that happened, took place right over here at Gibeon. This would have provided a wonderful opportunity to talk to their kids about God. And you know what? It paid off. Even at the age of 12, Jesus fully understood why he was here on the earth. And I realized that it would be easy to sit back and think, well, yeah, but he was God. He already knew why he was going to be here. And maybe that's true. To a point, but I tell you, God, Jesus had the ability to make his own decisions. Every day in Jesus' life, Jesus had to make decisions about, do I do this or that? Do I do what's right? Or do I do what's wrong? No doubt Joseph and Mary trained Jesus and taught him about God and how to make right decisions. Parents, do you want to serve God in your family? Teach your kids. Teach them. Teach them about life. Teach them how to get along with people. And teach them about God. And if you do that, you'll be serving God in your family. All right, children, it's your turn. I'll stand right here. What do you need to do to serve God in your own family? Well, let's look at John 19. Again, what I want to do is look at Jesus. What did Jesus do? Look at John 19. By the time we get to John 19, Jesus has been through a tremendous amount of pain and suffering. He's been arrested. He's been walked all over Jerusalem 2 or 3 times, shackled in the middle of the night. He's been up for over 24 hours. He's gone through a number of different trials, falsely accused, spat upon, beaten. He's been led bleeding, carrying his own cross to Calvary. Now he's hanging on the cross, nails in his hands and his feet. And beginning in John 19, verse 36, it says, I'm sorry. John 19, verse 26. John 19, verse 26. It says, when Jesus saw his mother and the disciple whom he loved standing nearby, he said to his mother, "Woman, behold your son." Then he said to the disciple, "Behold your mother." And from that hour, the disciple took her to his own home. Despite of everything that was going on in Jesus' life, if anybody had the right to think about themselves at any point in human history, it was right here. Jesus, if I was there, I'd have been thinking about me. But what was Jesus thinking about? He was thinking about his mother. Thinking about his mother. Kids, you want to serve God in your family? Simple. Love your parents. Love your parents. Do you have any idea what your parents do for you? Let me just answer the question for you. The answer is no, you don't. I still don't know everything my parents do for me. Have you ever wondered when you get up in the morning why your parents look tired? It's because they're probably up all night worrying about you. And have you ever wondered why at the end of the month there's absolutely no money left in the bank account? It's because they spent it on you. And have you ever wondered why your parents sometimes say they're hungry? It's probably because they gave you the last portion of the meal. Kids, love your parents. If you love your parents, you'll be serving God in your family. There's 3 different ways you can love your parents. First of all, I want you to listen to them. I know they talk a lot, and I know that you think they're being unreasonable. The truth of the matter is that they probably are. But more than likely, they're being unreasonable to themselves, not to you. Listen to your parents. They've been around. They know. The next thing is, be patient. Be patient with them. I'm going to tell y'all a secret. Let me just speak for every single parent who has ever existed on the face of the planet. We make mistakes. We admit it, and we're sorry. Be patient with us. Listen, we may not understand everything about, Facebook and Snapchat and Instagram and group text. We may not. But let me tell you this. There was at one point when you didn't know how to use a spoon. And we were patient with you then. and we pray that you be patient with us now. You can help us through this, but be patient with us. And by being patient with us, you can show how much you love us. And finally, let me just say, you can care. You can care for your parents. There's going to be a time in your life in which you're going to need to care for your parents. They're going to have physical problems or mental problems. And let me just tell you, it will not be easy. They may not even recognize you when you come into the room. And I know that there are some in this audience that are dealing with this right now with their own parents. And my thoughts and prayers are with you because I know it's hard. But think about Jesus. At this time in his life, when he's hanging there on the cross, what did he do? He cared for his mother. Kids, you want to serve God and your family? It's simple. Just love your parents. Love your parents. Now, I want to make one more comment about serving God with our physical families. I've so far been discussing situations that look basically like this, where you have a mother and a father and a whole house full of kids. But I recognize that there are other families that are here. You may be in a family that looks like this. And through no fault of your own, the father is no longer there for one reason or another. Or you may be in a family that looks like this. Again, no fault of your own, the mother is no longer in the picture for one reason or another. And let me just encourage you that you can do these same things. Don't let the fact that both parents are not in the room keep you from doing the things that you know you should do. You can still care for each other. You can still love your parents. And you can still teach your children. And in fact, in situations like this, you may have other opportunities that families with both parents don't have. Unique opportunities. Don't let those opportunities go by. For one reason or another, God has placed you in this situation. Make the best of it. Serve God in this family. There's actually two other types of families that I haven't mentioned yet. One of them is this family. Suppose you're a single man, you haven't gotten married yet, or you're a single woman. Listen, there's still things you can do in serving God in your family like this. You can teach others about life. You can teach others about God. You can love people. And you can care about people. There's all kind of things that you can do in whatever type of family you're in to serve God in your family. So what else can we learn about Jesus and his family? Let's look over quickly at Mark, the 12th chapter. In Mark 12, we have a story about Jesus while he's preaching in the city of Capernaum. And in verse 46, it says, "And while he was speaking to the people, behold, his mother and his brothers stood outside asking to speak with him. But he replied to the man who told him, 'Who is my brother? Who is my mother? And who are my brothers?' And stretching out his hand toward the disciples, he said, 'Here are my mothers and my brothers. For whosoever does the will of my Father who is in heaven is my brother and my sister and my mother.'" So see, when Jesus is talking about his mother and brothers and sisters, who's he talking about? He's not talking about his physical family. He's talking about his spiritual family. So it behooves us, at least briefly, to discuss how God wants us to serve him within our spiritual family. So how can we serve God within our spiritual family? Let's look at Acts the 9th chapter. In Acts the 9th chapter, we have a story of Peter in the city of Joppa. And beginning in verse 36, it says, Now, there was in Joppa a disciple named Tabitha, who's translated means Dorcas. She was full of good works and acts of charity. In those days, she became ill and died. And when they washed her, they laid her in an upper room. Since Lydda was near Joppa, the disciples, hearing that Peter was there, sent two men to him, urging him, "Please come to us without delay." So when Peter rose and went to them, when he arrived, they took him into the upper room. All the widows stood beside him, weeping and showing tunics and other garments that Dorcas had made while she was with him. Peter put them all outside, knelt down, and prayed. And turning to the body, he said, "Tabitha, arise." And she opened her eyes, and she saw Peter and sat up. And he gave her his hand and raised her up. Then calling the saints and widows, he presented her alive. What you're looking at is the picture of the church of St. Peter in Joppa. One of the things they have over in Israel is that anytime they find a place where they feel like they want to remember, somebody will build a church there. And this church was built to signify this event that we just read about. What made Dorcas such an inspiration to others? You know, it's not because, at least we're not told, it's not because she was the best Bible class teacher in Joppa. It's because she did things for others. She made things. And it had a huge impact on the disciples that she worshiped with. You want to serve God in your spiritual family? Do things for others. Do things for others. Well, what kind of things? Well, I can offer a couple of suggestions, but if I were to pass a piece of paper around, I'm sure y'all could come up with several more. But make a meal for someone. I'll say, "Well, Barry, I do that. You know, when someone has a death in the family or they're sick, I'll take a meal over there." That's great. And I encourage you to keep that up. Won't you just make a meal for someone for no reason at all? We're all busy. You know how nice a hot meal just arriving from somewhere would be? Do something for others. How about sending a card to someone who's lost a loved one? "Well, Barry, I do that. I do that too." Well, why don't you follow that up and send another card 2 months later? All of us in this audience have lost family members or friends. And you know the pain doesn't go away when the dirt has covered over the body. People struggle with that for a long time. Follow up with a card two months later or so. Run an errand for someone. You ever called up a mother with a young child and just said, "Hey, I'm running to Publix. Can I get you a gallon of ice cream?" Or that's probably what she'll ask for. Bread, milk, something. "Can I get you something? Because I know it's hard to get out." Run an errand for someone. You want to serve God in your spiritual family? Do things for others. Look for ways of doing things for each other. Second of all, let's look at Acts, the 21st chapter. Look at the 21st chapter of Acts. Beginning in verse 1, this is Paul coming back from what we refer to as the third missionary journey. And beginning in verse 1, it says, "And when they had parted from them and set sail, we came by a straight course to Kos, and the next day to Rhodes, and from there to Patara. And having found a ship crossing to Phoenicia, we went aboard and set sail. And when we had come to the side of Cyprus, leaving it on the left, we sailed to Syria and landed at Tyre. From there, the ship was to unload its cargo. And having sought out the disciples, we stayed there for 7 days. And through the Spirit, they were telling Paul not to go to Jerusalem. When our days were ended, we departed and went on our journey, and they all, with wives and children, accompanied us until we were outside the city. Kneeling down on the beach, we prayed and said farewell to one another. Then we went on board the ship and returned home." What you're looking at is a picture of the sun setting over the Mediterranean Sea. A scene very similar to what we just read about right here. What we read in these verses is a wonderful, wonderful example of pure love between brethren. When it came time for Paul and his party to leave, they all came to the shore. They hugged him. They prayed together. It's such a beautiful portrait of love between brethren. You want to serve God in your spiritual family? Love your brethren. Love your brethren. I know that sometimes loving brethren is not easy. I mean, why is that? Well, we're all different. We're all different. And sometimes things happen in life in which we get upset with each other. But you need to ask yourself the question, why am I upset? Am I upset because of sin that's been involved? Or am I upset for another reason? You know, if you're upset over sin, you know, God gives us instructions on how to handle that. We can go and talk to that brother or sister in love and work things out. If you're upset for another reason other than sin being committed, then you need to think about what you do before you react. All of us have friends who are Christians all over the country. And I know that all of us have seen instances in which an email was sent or a Facebook post was posted or a tweet was sent out or something that should have never been sent out. These were posts between brethren. You need to think about those things. You need to love one another. Look at the disciples who lived in Tyre. Work cohesively as a group. Worship together. Pray together. Encourage each other. And brethren, just love each other. If you love each other, you'll be serving God in your spiritual family. And finally tonight, I want to talk about one other thing you can do. You can help people when they've gone astray. One of the things that I love about traveling to Israel is it helps me to better understand the words I read in the Bible. When you go over there and you watch a shepherd and his sheep, you understand what Jesus is talking about. I live in East Limestone, and I've lived out there a number of years, and not once have I seen a shepherd with his herd of sheep come through my front yard. This is just something that we're not as familiar with. And so one of the reasons I love going over there is I love seeing that, because it helps me to understand what Jesus was talking about. What I want to do is show a brief video. As Kevin mentioned, I'm involved with a group that is making videos, and I want to give credit where credit is due. We did not make this video. Another group made this video. I can't endorse everything that this group puts out, but this video, I think, is wonderful, because it helps better to show you exactly what Jesus is talking about when he talks about the shepherd and his sheep. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to play this video and provide a little bit of commentary as we go through. Occasionally, a single sheep can get away from the fold. When this happens, they're completely lost. When they're lost, they're completely helpless. They literally have no hope. And the reason that they have no hope is because they've lost their shepherd. You know, going after a sheep, a lost sheep, is not an easy job. You have to leave the place where you are most comfortable. And you may have to go far away from that place where you're comfortable and go to a place in which you're not familiar. But you have to seek. It's going to take time and it's going to take effort. And when you have finally found the lost sheep, it's not enough to request that the sheep come and meet you halfway. Even though the lost sheep may see you, they could be so far gone that that they're not interested in leaving the place where they are. You have to go all of the way to where the sheep is. Once you've found the lost sheep, it often is not easy to convince them to return to the fold. Depending on their situation, they're going to need comforting. They may need a gentle, reassuring voice. And this may take time. But the comforting hand of the shepherd is needed. Often the journey back to the fold is a long one. Problems may not be easily solved or easily overcome. And it will take time. And occasionally there may be unforeseen obstacles that may be a struggle for the sheep. Reassurance must be continual and offered in a loving manner. But in the end, a lost sheep can be led back to the sheepfold. In Luke 9, Jesus said, "What man of you having 100 sheep, if he has lost one of them, does not leave the 99 in the open country and go after the one that's lost until he finds it? And when he has found it, he lays it on his shoulders, rejoicing. And when he comes home, he calls together his friends and his neighbors, saying to them, 'Rejoice with me, for I have found the sheep that was lost.' Just so, I tell you, there will be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous people who need no repentance." Brethren, it's easy to sit back and think and say, this is a job for a shepherd. We have shepherds in our congregation that do this. And while that is part of their job, I'll tell you, that's not just their job. That's all of our jobs. We're all shepherds looking for those lost sheep. And do you want to serve God in your spiritual family? You go out there and find those lost sheep and bring them back to the sheepfold. Serving God in your spiritual family, do things for others. Love your brethren. And help people who have gone astray and bring them back to the sheepfold. And that's my lesson. Serving God in your physical family and in your spiritual family. Service, let me tell you, as I mentioned at the beginning, is important. It's so important. Life is nothing but service. That's all we're doing is service. In just a moment, we're going to sing a song of invitation. And I'm so glad that the elders have decided to create this series of lessons on service. There probably can't be a better series. And I'm honored to be part of it. Folks, life is all about service. And living a life for God is all about service. So here's the question for all of us. Have you been serving the way you should be serving in your physical family and in your spiritual family? Have you been serving the way you should have been serving? Do you want to be a part of Jesus' family? We actually read tonight how you do that. You do the will of the Father who's in heaven. When you do that, you're part of Jesus' family. And the Lord's invitation is extended. If any of you have a need to respond to the invitation, we ask you to come to the front while we stand and while we sing.